left.
Yeah, he did. But that doesn't mean I'm happy that the guy's dead.
A new sound arose from the woods to the side, an eerie, guttural croak that made me shiver.
What was that? I asked.
A velociraptor, I think, Chang said.
What? There aren't any dinosaurs in Yosemite.
There are now. It's a new module I designed for the head-to-head. It provides motivation to run faster.
Another guttural croak came from the forest, closer this time. Even though the dinosaurs were imaginary, they provoked a very real fear in me. I felt my adrenaline spike and reflexively picked up the pace. Ahead of me, Chang did too. He said,
I'll admit, I was angry at Dr. Holtz when I first learned he'd stolen my idea. I mean, big ideas don't just come to you every day. Holtz and I were both working at NASA, doing research. I'd thought of a way to increase our metabolism of oxygen in outer space and shared it with him. And a couple of months later, the guy's taking credit for it. Frankly, I wanted his head on a stick. But that was years ago. There's no point in holding on to that kind of emotion. It'll eat you up inside. So I dealt with it. Talked to my shrink, did some yoga. Eventually, I realized that Dr. Holtz wasn't even aware of what he'd done. He hadn't stolen my idea maliciously. In fact, I think he'd forgotten all about our conversation and thought he came up with the idea himself, which happens more than you'd think in science. People are always forgetting where ideas come from.
Whoa!
Chang leaped aside as a 6-foot-tall velociraptor lunged out of the trees at him. It shot across the trail in front of me, so close that I had to duck under its tail. Another roar sounded directly behind me. I looked back and found 2 more velociraptors in pursuit. I ran even faster, my legs pounding on the treadmill. I didn't like this new motivator. I'd been perfectly happy in regular Yosemite without prehistoric carnivores to worry about. But I didn't want to bother Chang to shut it off. If I did, he might stop talking about Dr. Holtz. As it was, he was eagerly unburdening himself, unconcerned by the dinosaurs.
And then the chance to come up here presented itself, Chang was saying, and I wanted it. I knew Holtz was going to be here. He was a lock for this place, the only person guaranteed a trip. So I had to take whatever issues I had with him and chuck them once and for all. There were a lot of hoops to jump through to get up here, 1,000,000 interviews, psych reviews, physical exams, and if there was a part of your body they could probe, they probed it. If anyone thought I had an axe to grind with Holtz, I wouldn't have made it past round 1. And believe me, they asked, over and over again. But like I said, I'm over it. The past is the past. What happened between Holtz and me is long forgotten.
The way Chang said it, it sounded completely honest and convincing, though I was a bit distracted by the velociraptors pursuing me. I wished I could have seen Chang's face as he talked, rather than the back of his avatar's head. In retrospect, deciding to grill a murder suspect in a virtual world hadn't turned out to be such a good idea, but I didn't have a choice now.
I asked, so given that, then there's no way that anyone who didn't like Dr. Holtz could have gotten up here, right? NASA would have booted them.
Well, not necessarily, Chang admitted. That was certainly the case for me, because I was coming here solo, and there was a lot of competition for my slot. In the vetting process, they were looking for any reason to ding you. But there are others up here who didn't have such a rigorous assessment.
A bear burst through the trees ahead of us and scampered across the trail. Normally, that alone would have been exciting. But now, 3 Carnotauruses emerged from the forest in pursuit. They plunged into the trees and disappeared again without so much as a glance at us.
Who had an easy time getting approved for here? I asked.
The whole Sjoberg clan, for starters, Chang replied. Since they bought their way in here, no one really cared much that they were a bunch of twits.
Do you think any of them didn't like Dr. Holtz?
I wouldn't be surprised. These Nordic dorkwads don't seem to like anybody. And then there's Dr. Marquez. Holtz tried to block him from even coming up here.
Really? Why?
'Cause Marquez is a lousy psychiatrist.
What? I stumbled slightly on the treadmill in surprise. But he's famous.
That doesn't mean he's good. The guy got his medical degree from a 6th-rate school in the Bahamas. He couldn't diagnose a baked potato. Holtz thought he'd be a waste of space up here. But NASA trumped him. They wanted Alina Brahmaputra Marquez up here for her astrophysics chops, and they figured her celebrity husband would be good for publicity.
You mean they only wanted Marquez for his name?
Absolutely. Think about all the press coverage before we all came up here. Who got the most attention?
I thought back to the time after all the Moonies had been announced to the public. We had all become famous, but Dr. Marquez had been at a different level. He'd been invited on hundreds of talk shows and been at every NASA press conference.
It was Dr. Marquez.
Right. The public doesn't care about astrophysicists or geochemists. They care about famous people. NASA probably would have sent up a movie star if it didn't mean bumping a scientist from coming here. Dr. Marquez was the next best thing. He was famous enough to get a lot of attention, and he filled the slot for a psychiatrist.
But wasn't anyone besides Dr. Holtz concerned that he's not good?
I'm sure someone was, but I know there were other people who felt it wasn't that important to have a psychiatrist here at all, so they might as well send a lousy one who could get publicity for the moon base rather than looking for a good one who couldn't.
There was a snort behind me, so close I thought I could feel the exhalation riffle my hair. I'd been so caught up in what Chang was saying that I'd momentarily forgotten about the raptors behind us. Now I spun to find 36 toothbrush-sized teeth ready to clamp down on my head, a strand of drool ominously dangling from them. I sprinted forward, pulling alongside Chang as the jaws snapped shut.
"That was close," he laughed. "You were almost an appetizer."
I didn't think it was nearly as funny. My heart was pounding. Did Dr. Marquez know Dr. Holtz tried to block him?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't a secret. Holtz wrote a whole report detailing why Marquez was bad at his job. Marquez was livid and definitely embarrassed. Then when NASA okayed him to come here, he figured that vindicated him. But Holtz kept dissing him, and he refused to ever let Marquez assess him up here. In fact, he wouldn't even talk to the guy.
So if Dr. Holtz had a mental problem, no one would have caught it?
I suppose not. Although Holtz probably would have argued that Marquez wouldn't have been able to diagnose it anyhow.
I wondered if a bruised ego was enough motivation to want to kill somebody. Was there anyone else who didn't like Dr. Holtz? Chang's avatar shot me a sidelong glance.
Why are you so interested in this?
Up till yesterday I thought everyone liked him, and then I started hearing that people didn't. It's pretty surprising.
This was an understatement. In truth, I found the number of potential killers Dr. Holtz was racking up to be extremely disturbing.
How could anyone who was so nice have so many enemies, I wondered. Or was Dr. Holtz not quite as nice as I'd believed?
You're not thinking someone bumped Holtz off, are you? Chang asked.
No, I said, way too fast. I don't know what I was thinking. It's really hard to concentrate with these dinosaurs chasing us.
You don't like it?
Chang seemed genuinely surprised.
I think they're cool.
They creep me out.
Oh,
Chang's avatar frowned.
You know, they can't really hurt you, right? Even virtually. It's not like they'll eat your avatar if you don't run fast enough. They're only designed to stay right behind us and push our pace.
I can think of lots of less scary ways to do that, I argued. Like, we could chase something. Rabbits or squirrels. Something that isn't dangerous.
You're sure you want me to shut it off? Chang sounded disappointed. It gets really exciting right about now.
We emerged into a clearing near Yosemite Falls, only we could barely see the cataract because there was a Tyrannosaurus standing in front of it. It loomed over us, straddling the trail, and loosed a primal roar that jackhammered my eardrums.
Yes, shut it off, I said. I'm done.
I snapped off my goggles and stopped running. To my surprise, the readout said we'd gone almost 2 miles.
Look at that, Chang crowed, his goggles now perched on his forehead. I told you those raptors were good motivators. Nice run.
He held up his hand for a high five. I held up mine, and Chang slapped it so hard I thought it might come off.
Could you half-wit shut your stupid mouths for once?
I knew who'd spoken, even before turning to face him. There was only one person at MBA who was so relentlessly mean-spirited. Lars Sjoberg. He stood in the doorway of the gym, scowling, wearing pajamas, slippers, and a fluffy robe emblazoned with an MBA logo. The robe was part of the Sjoberg's deluxe tourist package. There still appeared to be some dried coleslaw crusted in his white blonde hair.
It's hard enough to sleep in this dung heap without imbeciles carrying on at all hours of the night.
Chang's muscles tensed, though I could tell he was trying hard to restrain his temper. He undid his gravity belt, stepped off the treadmill, and hung his goggles on the wall by the resistance bands.
We weren't carrying on, Mr. Sjoberg. We were simply working out. At 2 o'clock in the morning, Lars snarled, a time when normal people are in bed?
We couldn't sleep, I told him. We're too upset about Dr. Holtz.
Lars snorted in disgust. As if that old fool didn't cause me enough grief when he was alive.
What's that supposed to mean? Chang demanded.
All of you put this man on a pedestal when he deserved no such thing, Lars groused. He was an advisor on this base. A man who supposedly specialized in improving our quality of life off Earth. Well, given that there is no quality of life here at all, I'd say that makes your Dr. Holtz a complete and total failure.
Dr. Holtz's job was to assess the effects of low gravity and space travel on the human body, Chang said, not to run a spa for rich dinks like you. If you're unhappy here, that's your fault, not his. He didn't ask you to come here. In fact, he tried to prevent you from doing it. You came on your own.
Only because NASA and its so-called scientists assured us this would be the adventure of a lifetime.
Lars stormed toward Chang, his pale blue eyes blazing. He seemed to be itching for a fight, every annoyance he'd felt at MBA now flowing out of him.
They all lied to us, including your precious Dr. Holtz. The man was a quack, a fool who knew nothing except how to shill for NASA.
Lars was now face to face with Chang. I'd never realized it before, but Lars was a big man, as tall as Chang. Though he was flabby around the middle, Lars looked like he could handle himself in a fight.
"Take that back," Chang said. "The man just died. He deserves some respect."
Lars poked Chang in the chest with his finger.
"Not from me."
"Don't touch me," Chang told him.
"I'll do whatever I want."
Lars poked Chang in the chest again.
"My family and I are leaving on that rocket, so we'll only be in this godforsaken place a few more days. But during that time, you and your fellow so-called scientists will give us the respect we deserve."
"Oh, I'm happy to give you exactly what you deserve."
Chang's hands clenched into fists. Lars had been waiting for this. He was already swinging his fist. I could see the hatred in his eyes. It seemed he'd been wanting to punch Chang for a long time. But Chang was ready for it. He sidestepped deftly. Lars's fist grazed Chang's nose and then slammed into the wall. While Lars howled in pain, Chang grabbed the loose end of a wall-mounted resistance band and yanked the band tight across Lars's face, flinging the trillionaire backward into the wall. Lars's head banged into the cement so hard it staggered him. Chang released the resistance band. The fight was already over. Lars reeled, struggling to focus on his opponent.
"I hate you."
He gasped and then collapsed face first on the floor. Chang looked at me.
"You're my witness, Dash. This was self-defense, and technically, I never laid a hand on the guy."
He stepped over Lars Hjoberg's prone body and left the gym, whistling so cheerfully it was unsettling. I stared at the unconscious trillionaire, worried. I'd just learned two very disturbing things. Lars Hjoberg was a dangerous man who'd had a big grudge against Dr. Holtz. And even though Chang Kowalski said he'd forgiven Dr. Holtz, he certainly wasn't someone you wanted angry at you. Excerpt from the Official Resident's Guide to Moonbase Alpha. Copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Sleep. Although great care has been taken to provide the highest quality sleeping quarters at MBA, there's a slight chance you might experience some issues with sleep at night, especially immediately after your arrival. Sleep difficulties are not new to the space program, but you will be pleased to know that decades of research have greatly improved your ability to get a good night's rest. With our dark, quiet sleeping spaces, steady oxygen flows, and comfortable mattresses, after a few days' adjustment to life on the moon, we guarantee you'll be sleeping just as well as you did on Earth, if not better. A full night's sleep is actually not guaranteed. If you continue to have difficulties getting rest, please consult with a base doctor and or psychiatrist for help. If sleeplessness persists, specialized drugs designed to aid sleep in non-Earth locations can be prescribed.
Chapter 13. Possible Suspects. Lunar Day 189. Much later in the morning than expected.
"Wake up, sleepyhead."
The words were soft and gentle in my ear. I groggily pried my eyes open and found Zan Perfonic peering into my sleep pod.
"What time is it?" I groaned.
"Nearly lunchtime."
"What?"
I sat up, cracking my head on the low ceiling. "Darn it! I overslept."
"It's all right," Zan said soothingly. "School's been canceled again today. You're not missing anything."
I lay back down, rubbing my head. "I couldn't fall asleep," I explained. "I was up until 5 in the morning. "Well, you had an emotionally exhausting day yesterday, and a stressful night in the gym as well." I groaned again.
"You know about that?"
"Everyone knows about it. It's all anyone is talking about. Lars Hjoberg is threatening to sue NASA, Chang, and anyone else he can think of. Meanwhile, Chang is saying it was self-defense, and that you can back him up, although Nina has already viewed the security footage from the gym, and she says the evidence looks like it's in Chang's favor." I was starting to feel a little weird, having this conversation while I was still in bed. Under the sheets, I was only wearing my boxers.
"Do you mind closing your eyes while I get some clothes on?" I asked.
"Oh, of course."
Zan ducked away from the entrance to my sleep pod. "Sorry, I didn't want to barge in on you like this, but I really need to see what you found."
"It's okay.
I've wanted to talk to you since yesterday. I peered out of my sleep pod and saw Zan standing at the far end of the room, her back to me. She was watching the big slim screen, which was displaying a fictitious landscape full of rainbows and unicorns instead of Hapuna Beach. Violet must have reprogrammed it. I leaped to the floor and scurried over to the bureau. I even came looking for you.
Dash, I told you not to do that. No one can know we're working together.
I was careful. I didn't tell anyone I was looking for you. I just looked.
You haven't told anyone about me? Or what we're doing?
No, I swear.
Where were you last night?
In the temp quarters. I'm sorry. I was wiped out from the trip here. I yanked on a t-shirt and shorts.
Okay, I'm dressed.
Zan swung back to face me.
Did you get the footage of the airlock?
Yes. Zan's face lit up in excitement. Her eyes were almost the exact same color as those of the unicorns on the slim screen behind her.
Well?
Dr. Holtz might have been forced to go out the airlock against his will. The news upset Zan, and yet she seemed excited by it, too. I could understand why. I'd felt the same way. It proved we were both right about the death being suspicious.
How do you know?
It's better if I show it to you. I'd slept with my watch on to protect it. I touched it to our tabletop slim screen, transferring the security footage Kira had found, then played it for Zan.
It doesn't look like anyone's forcing him to do anything, Zan said.
Just wait. I fast-forwarded to the point where Dr. Holtz started signing with his hands.
What's he doing? Zan asked.
It's sign language, I told her, the way deaf people used to communicate.
Oh, right. Do you speak it?
No, I had to have the computer translate it. Dr. Holtz said, "This is a murder. Earth killed me. Find my phone. Tell my family I love them." Zan took in a sharp breath and turned away. It looked like she was trying not to cry. She bowed her head and rubbed her temples like she was trying to process everything. I froze the footage on the image of Dr. Holtz on the moon, staring up at Earth.
Do you want to watch it again?
Zan shook her head.
No, once was enough. To know that another person was behind this is so upsetting.
Well, I said cautiously, Dr. Holtz doesn't actually say that another person is behind this. He says the Earth made him do it.
Yes, that is odd, but I suspect it's some sort of code for the name of whoever forced him onto the moon.
Isn't the sign language already code enough?
Maybe not, Zan replied sadly.
Maybe he was afraid the killer would watch the footage and erase it if they recognized their name, which would mean the killer would have access to the security system.
Nina, I said. She's the only one with that kind of access here, Zan agreed, and she's been trying to block any investigation since the beginning.
But why would she want Dr. Holtz dead, I asked, and how did she force him to go out the airlock?
I don't know, Zan admitted sadly. Maybe there's another camera angle that shows her. You might have to grab all the footage from around the staging area that night.
I started to say we did, but caught myself at the last second, not wanting to mention Kira.
I did. There's no one else visible in any shot except Dr. Holtz.
Zan sighed.
Then she must have gotten to him earlier somehow. Sometime between his conversation in the bathroom and the time he went out the airlock. Something important transpired in those 2.5 hours. Dr. Holtz says, find my phone. He must have recorded something on it. Do you have any idea where it might be?
I sat on an inflatacube, daunted. No, I tried his room last night, but it was locked.
Zan shook her head and started pacing. I doubt he would have hidden it there anyway. That's far too obvious. I guarantee you Nina, or someone else, has already scoured his quarters. And he wouldn't have kept the evidence on him either, knowing they'd search his body.
The science pod, then? He had a station there.
He shared that station with Dr. Jenke, and it seems too obvious as well.
Then where? I asked, feeling frustrated. This base isn't huge, but there are still thousands of places to hide something as small as a phone.
I know. Zan sounded as frustrated as I was. We'll both just have to think on this.
I hesitated before bringing up my next point, aware Zan wouldn't like hearing it any more than I had.
There's one other thing you should know. According to my parents, there's a possibility that Dr. Holtz was losing his mind.
Zan stopped pacing. She whirled toward me, her eyes wide in surprise.
Why would they say that?
They said he'd been acting strange lately, and talking to himself. They think he might have gone out the airlock because he was paranoid or schizophrenic or something. They even think his big discovery might not be real, like a figment of his imagination.
Zan looked very upset by all of this for a moment, but then shook it off.
Dr. Holtz might have seemed a bit erratic lately, but I'm sure your parents are wrong. He wasn't crazy. I spoke to him very recently, and he seemed as sane as could be.
Well, that doesn't mean he was sane all the time.
True, but your parents were basing their analysis of him on random observations as well. There has never been a documented case of life on the moon driving anyone crazy. There were hundreds of people up here during the construction of this base, and there are dozens living here now. Some of them might have gotten depressed or desperately homesick, but nothing worse than that. Well, what if Dr. Holtz was losing his mind before he came here? I asked. What if this was Alzheimer's or something?
Zan shook her head.
Dr. Holtz was thoroughly vetted by NASA's medical staff before being approved for this mission. Because of his age, they were certainly checking for Alzheimer's or any other type of disease like that. If he'd shown even a trace, they would have flagged him. But he was given a clean bill of health, mentally and physically. It's been 6 months since then, I said, and he wasn't visiting Dr. Marquez like he was supposed to, although Chang says that probably didn't matter. 6 months isn't long enough to go from completely sane to imagining great scientific discoveries and thinking that someone is forcing you out the airlock. Trust me on this, Dashiell. I've studied human psychology.
I raised my hands in surrender.
All right. I'm just telling you what my folks said. Dr. Holtz didn't seem crazy to me either.
Up until he signed that the Earth had killed him.
That's not crazy. It's code for something.
I nodded agreement, although I wasn't quite as convinced as Zan about this.
Is there anyone else besides Nina who might have had access to the security footage?
Zan focused her bright blue eyes on me.
Why do you ask?
Well, I know Nina's been acting suspicious through all this, but she doesn't seem to have a motive, whereas some other people do.
Like who?
Lars Sjoberg. He didn't like Dr. Holtz at all. That's what the whole thing in the gym was about last night. He was saying all sorts of bad stuff about Dr. Holtz, and Chang got upset.
What kind of bad stuff?
That Dr. Holtz did a lousy job making this base fit for humans, even though that wasn't really his job.
Zan began pacing again. Lars blew $500 million to come up here. He's probably looking for someone to blame besides himself, and he certainly has a violent side. And now, suddenly, he's demanding that Nina put him and his family on the rocket back to Earth. Like he's trying to get away from the crime scene as fast as possible.
That's true.
Is Nina going to let him?
I don't know. Letting the Sjobergs go will cause a huge mess as far as scheduling is concerned. A lot of the other temps would end up stuck here until the next rocket comes. But NASA doesn't want one of the world's most wealthy and powerful men telling people he's being held prisoner up here. They need the money from future tourists to keep this place going. So it's possible that if the Sjobergs sign a contract swearing they won't badmouth Moonbase Alpha, NASA will find a way to let them go home tomorrow.
So he'll get away?
He's very wealthy and powerful. I suppose that back on Earth, he might be able to keep from being arrested. For instance, he could move to a country where the U.S. couldn't extradite him, if he's even guilty. We don't really have any proof of that.
Zan stared thoughtfully at the big slim screen, watching the digital unicorns as they frolicked beneath the rainbows. Who else do you suspect?
I paused, not thrilled about what I had to say next.
Chang Hai Tech.
Zan looked back at me, surprised.
Really?
He accused Dr. Holtz of stealing an idea from him a long time ago. He says he's over it, but maybe that's a lie. Last night in the gym, he was pretty scary when he was angry.
I suppose. But if he really has been holding a grudge all this time, why not kill Dr. Holtz on Earth? It'd be far easier to cover his tracks there.
If he did it, he's done a good job covering them here, I said. There doesn't seem to be any evidence against him at all. Maybe he thought he could make it look like an accident better up here. Or get Lars Sjoberg to take the fall for it.
Good point, Zan admitted.
There's also Dr. Marquez, I offered. According to Chang, he's not a very good psychiatrist. Dr. Holtz tried to block him from coming up here, and he knew it.
Really? That's interesting.
And Daphne Merritt's up to something, too. I saw her fiddling with the station computers last night. I don't know if it has anything to do with Dr. Holtz, but it was suspicious.
Wow. Zan blew out a big breath. That's quite a list of suspects.
There's one more thing, I said. I brought up the threatening text on my smartwatch and showed it to Zan. This isn't actually from Kira. Someone hacked her account and used it to send me this. Zan read the text, then looked at me with fear in her eyes.
When did this happen?
Last night, after dinner. That's why I was trying to find you. I showed it to my parents, but they said it was probably someone like Patton Sjoberg trying to scare me.
I suppose that's possible, but I think you're right to be concerned. Zan shook her head sadly. Oh, Dash, I'm sorry. I was hoping something like this wouldn't happen. So, you think I'm really in danger? I'm not sure. If it was really the killer who sent this, they're not telling you that they're coming for you next. They're just warning you to back off, which probably means they're scared. We've gotten close to them, and they're worried they'll get caught. But this certainly isn't something to take lightly either. My watch alarm chimed. I glanced at it and groaned. What's wrong? Zan asked. I forgot I'm supposed to have a session with Dr. Marquez today. About what? Everyone thinks I'm going psycho because I said Dr. Holtz's death was suspicious, and yet here's all this evidence that says it was. Even so, it's best to keep this to ourselves. Zan fixed me with a piercing stare. You swear you haven't told anyone else about what we're up to? I swear, I lied. Good. Although, Zan trailed off as though she was embarrassed about finishing the sentence. Do you need something else? I asked. I hate to ask, especially given the threat you've received. That's even more reason I want to help, I said. The faster we find whoever sent this, the less chance there is they can hurt me. That wasn't the only reason. I didn't want to admit it to Zan, but the investigation was exciting. It had shaken up my dull life at MBA and given me something to focus on. Even though I'd been threatened, I didn't want to go back to my boring old routine. I just need you to keep your eyes and ears open a bit longer, Zan told me. I'm going to look into all these leads you've found and try to figure out where Dr. Holt stashed his phone, but I could still use another brain on this. Sound out Dr. Marquez right now. Watch Daphne to see if she does anything else suspicious. Keep your distance and don't do anything stupid, but pay close attention to our suspects and anything else you notice that's out of the ordinary. That's it? I asked. Trust me, that's plenty. Now hurry, you don't want to be late to your appointment with Dr. Marquez. Actually, I do. In fact, I'd prefer to miss it completely. Zan laughed. It sounded so sweet, it was almost like a song. I understand, and if he wasn't a suspect, I wouldn't push you. All right. I headed for the door, opened it a crack, and peeked into the hall. Mr. Grissom was passing by on the ground floor, but otherwise there was no one around. Once Mr. Grissom was around the corner, I stepped out onto the catwalk and waved Zan through after me. She hurried for the stairs while I locked the door. She'd only gone a few steps before something occurred to me. Wait, I whispered. Zan turned back, looking nervous to be out in the open with me. What? I told you about all the suspects I found. Did you find any? Yes. Who? Trust me, Dashiell. The less you know about what I'm doing, the safer you are. Before I could protest, Zan ducked around the corner, disappearing from sight.
Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Mental health. At MBA, every effort has been made to create a relaxing, enjoyable environment for all lunar knots. However, as you will be among the first humans to ever live on a non-Earth celestial object, you will be subjected to things that few of your fellow humans have ever experienced. Therefore, as part of our commitment to provide the finest medical care possible, all lunar knots are required to visit the base psychiatrist on a regularly scheduled basis. Keep in mind, there is no evidence that life on the moon causes any mental conditions that life on Earth does not. This psychiatric monitoring and assessment will help us learn about the effects of lunar life on MBA residents and help us plan for future voyages, perhaps to places even farther than the moon. In addition, psychiatric sessions can be relaxing, enlightening, and even fun, so make the most of them. Although there is some minor evidence the disruption of the standard Earth day can lead to depression.
Chapter 14. Psychiatric Evaluation. Lunar Day 189. Lunchtime.
How are you feeling, Dashiell? Dr. Marquez asked.
Hungry, I said. I missed breakfast today.
You know that's not what I mean.
That's how I'm feeling. I held up a plate of recently rehydrated enchiladas. That's why I've got this. I didn't want to miss lunch, too.
Dr. Marquez picked at something in his teeth. He was seated on an inflatocube across the table from me in his family's residence. Dr. Marquez usually met patients in the medical bay, but Dr. Holtz's body was still in there, and everyone figured that having a corpse around wasn't conducive to a good therapy session. The Marquez family's large slim screen was set to an image of a wheat field.
acres of golden grass rippling in a light breeze. It was probably supposed to be relaxing, but all it really did was make me hungry for fresh-baked bread. I'd never enjoyed my meetings with Dr. Marquez, but I put up with them because I thought they were important. Now that Chang had told me Dr. Marquez wasn't very good at his job, I was annoyed. His nervous tics and probing questions were getting under my skin, and it was hard to hide, since he kept asking me to discuss my feelings. Dr. Marquez said, "Your parents have expressed concern about how you're responding to Dr. Holtz's death. You've been distressed, distracted, paranoid." What did I do that was paranoid? "You suggested that the death wasn't a mere accident, that there might be a conspiracy surrounding it." I didn't say anything about a conspiracy. I forked some of my enchiladas into my mouth, only to discover they weren't enchiladas. They were liver and onions that had been mislabeled. I spat it back onto the plate. Dr. Marquez pointed triumphantly. "Ah, see what you just did? You told me a lie, and your own body reacted violently against it. In being dishonest with me, you almost made yourself throw up." "No, I almost threw up because this food sucks," I countered. "It's liver and onions. I didn't like liver and onions back on Earth. No one does. So what NASA moron thought it would be a good idea to dehydrate it?"
"You're displaying a great deal of anger," Dr. Marquez said. "I wonder if this might truly be about something else besides the food."
"It's not," I said. "I'm starving and I just got the worst lunch imaginable. I'd rather eat rat droppings."
Dr. Marquez templed his fingers under his chin. This was a very special weird tic of his, the one he did when he was trying to look smart. He generally followed it with what he imagined was a very impressive observation. "I think you're subverting your anger, Dashiell. Something else is annoying you."
"Yeah, you," I wanted to say, but I didn't. Instead, I shoved the liver and onions away from me. A little bit sloshed off the plate onto the table. Dr. Marquez recoiled from it.
"Dashiell, I understand the source of this anger. Dr. Holtz's death has been upsetting to all of us."
"No," I said, "it hasn't." Dr. Marquez arched an eyebrow.
"You mean it's not upsetting to you?"
"No, it's very upsetting to me. But other people here haven't been upset at all. In fact, there were a lot of people here who didn't like Dr. Holtz very much."
"That's not true.
Like you, for instance."
Dr. Marquez froze. He'd been about to say something, but now a weird, surprised gagging noise came from his mouth. It took him a while to decide what the proper response to my accusation should be. He finally opted for indignation. "Why would you say something like that?"
"Because it's true."
"And what could I possibly have against Dr. Holtz?"
"He thought you were a lousy doctor and tried to keep you from coming up here." Dr. Marquez made the weird gagging noise again. He was struggling to control his emotions, but he couldn't quite do it. Anger flashed in his eyes.
"Where did you hear that?"
I didn't want to rat Chang out, so I said, "Lots of people said so."
"Well, it's absolutely false."
"So you weren't angry at Dr. Holtz?"
"This session isn't about me. It's about you." On another day, I might have backed down, but Zan had asked me to sound out Dr. Marquez. And besides, provoking him was much more fun than answering annoying questions about myself. "All I'm saying is, there are people, like you, who aren't at all upset that Dr. Holtz died. So maybe it's not paranoid of me to think that his death wasn't an accident."
Dr. Marquez gasped. "Are you accusing me of something?" Rather than answer, I shrugged.
Dr. Marquez shook his head and tutted, "This is very disturbing. Your delusions are worse than I was led to believe. Have you told anyone else this?"
"Some people in security."
"And what was their response?"
"They were already suspicious of you." It was a lie, but Dr. Marquez bought it. His eyes went wide in surprise.
"That's ridiculous. I had nothing to do with Dr. Holtz's death. And besides, there are plenty of people here who were far angrier at Dr. Holtz than me."
"Like who?"
"Lars Hjoberg and his wife,"
Dr. Marquez blurted out, so worked up he forgot all about censoring himself.
I leaned forward, intrigued. "Sonia?" "Oh, definitely. She hated Dr. Holtz. He hadn't wanted the Hjobergs to come here and had been very vocal about it. Sonia was offended, and believe me, that is one woman you don't want on your bad side. Everyone thinks Lars is dangerous, but she's the real hothead in that family."
"Really? She doesn't seem like it."
Don't believe that icy exterior of hers. Underneath, she's a volcano. Back on Earth, at a charity luncheon a few years ago, one of her best friends made a joke about her being shallow. Sonia stabbed her in the leg with an oyster fork. Lars had to spend nearly $1 million on lawyers to keep her from filing charges.
I never heard that, I said.
Lars spent another couple million keeping the story hushed up. I only found out during a hypnosis session. I was growing more convinced that Dr. Marquez wasn't a very good psychiatrist. I was pretty sure doctors weren't supposed to talk about their patients like this. But as long as Dr. Marquez was doing it, I was going to keep pushing him.
Did she ever hurt anyone else?
Oh, yes. She once attacked a paparazzo with a high-heeled shoe. And when she caught a butler trying to steal some of her lingerie, she tackled him and bit part of his ear off.
And NASA let her come up here?
They didn't know. Like I said, the Sjoberg spent a lot of money to keep her bad behavior under wraps. But she's not the only enemy Dr. Holtz had up here. There's also Mr. Grissom.
He didn't like Dr. Holtz either?
Dr. Marquez started to say something, but then changed his mind. Actually, I can't speak to that.
Why? Did Mr. Grissom tell you something in confidence?
No. In fact, Mr. Grissom doesn't have any sessions with me.
He doesn't? I asked. I thought everyone was required to do that.
Dr. Marquez shrugged.
Not him. I don't know why. I asked my superiors at NASA, but they said to forget about it and just let him be.
So then why did you suggest him?
I don't think he and Dr. Holtz liked each other. I once overheard Dr. Holtz telling Nina he didn't think Mr. Grissom could be trusted.
Why not?
I don't know. That was all I heard. It's no basis to accuse Mr. Grissom of anything. I should never have mentioned it. You got under my skin, and I made a mistake.
Dr. Marquez nervously nibbled on his thumbnail.
So is there anyone else you suspect? I asked.
I've said too much as it is.
I'm not asking for anything you heard in a session.
The point is, I shouldn't even be playing this game.
Dr. Marquez was calming down now, seeming to realize that he'd blabbed too much. He corkscrewed his index finger in his ear, digging out a glob of wax.
No good can come out of making accusations. No one had anything to do with Dr. Holtz's death except Dr. Holtz. He made an error of judgment and died by accident. End of story.
But you just accused two people yourself, I said. You really think this was an accident?
Instead of answering, Dr. Marquez sniffed the earwax, wrinkled his nose, then flicked the wax across the room, where it stuck to the wall.
Let's talk about you, Dashiell. Why do you continue to insist there's a conspiracy at work?
I sighed. Dr. Marquez had regained his composure. I wasn't going to get any more out of him. Now I'd be stuck talking about my feelings for the next hour. Although I had pried two new leads out of him, which was very unsettling. A day before, I thought that everyone at MBA had loved Dr. Holtz. Now, everywhere I looked, I uncovered more people with a grudge against him, any one of whom might have wanted him dead.
Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha, copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Assembly. Although MBA is equipped so that all lunar knots have multiple ways of communicating with one another, email, phone, comlink, etc., sometimes the best way to disseminate information is still the good old-fashioned group meeting. Therefore, on the first Monday of every month, a mandatory assembly will take place in the rec center for all lunar knots over age 18. Said meetings will be run by the Moonbase commander, unless he or she assigns someone else that duty, and shall cover any topics deemed necessary. If there is something you would like discussed with the group, please submit it to the MBC several days ahead of time. In addition, the MBC has the right to call additional meetings whenever he or she deems necessary, and for whatever residence he or she deems necessary as well. In these cases, the assembly should be considered mandatory for all whose presence is requested, except in the case of severe illness. Furthermore, if there is a group of lunar knots whom you would like to call an assembly for, please submit your request to the MBC at least 7 days in advance for scheduling purposes. And remember, everyone enjoys an assembly far more if the person leading it is organized and enthusiastic and doesn't waste their time. So please conduct yours accordingly.
Chapter 15. Impossible Travel. Lunar Day 189. Afternoon. The memorial service was held for Dr. Holtz that afternoon.
Attendance was mandatory. The Sjobergs didn't show up anyhow. Everyone else came, though. Even the kids were asked to be there, so the rec room was unusually crowded. There were so many people we'd had to bring extra inflated cubes from our rooms, and some of us still didn't have a place to sit. I had to stand in the back with Kira. Unlike the other funerals I'd been to before, this one was weirdly casual. No one had anything formal to wear on base. Instead, we all looked like we were dressed for a Sunday barbecue. Although lots of people had been asked to speak about Dr. Holtz, Nina ran the proceedings, which was probably a mistake. Her speech about Dr. Holtz was merely a flat, emotionless laundry list of everything he had done in his life. And I mean everything. Short of what he ate for breakfast every day, it didn't sound like any fact had been left out. I could barely keep my eyes open, and I wasn't alone. The little kids passed out within a few minutes. Most of the adults were struggling to stay awake as well. Dr. Howard was slumped against the wall, unconscious, his tongue lolling out of his open mouth. My parents were up front. They had to be, as Mom was going to speak. Violet was curled up in Dad's lap, snoring softly. "In 1998, Nina droned, Dr. Holtz published his first paper in the International Journal of Astrophysics and Space Science, concerning the effects of long-term spaceflight on the human intestinal tract." Kira leaned over to me and whispered, "I have to tell you something about Dr. Holtz." Before answering, I glanced around to make sure no one was paying attention to us. It seemed disrespectful to talk during the memorial, but listening to Nina one more minute was going to put me to sleep, and that wasn't particularly reverent either. Besides, we were a good distance away from everyone else. "What?" I whispered back. "I had an idea for a lead this morning. I figured I could hack the computer and check MBA's phone logs for the night Dr. Holtz died to see who he was talking to when you overheard him in the bathroom. If I hadn't been in the middle of a funeral, I would have smacked my forehead. NASA certainly would have kept a log of all phone calls made at the base. I couldn't believe I hadn't thought to check it myself." "And? Did you do it?" "Well, I tried, but there's no record of Dr. Holtz making a call at 2:30 that night. In fact, there's no record of anyone making a call at any time around then." I frowned, concerned. "That's not possible. I heard him. Someone must have erased the call logs." "That's what I figured. And who do you think has the authority to do that?" I looked toward the front of the room. "Nina." "Exactly." Nina was still delivering the eulogy without any passion whatsoever. "Dr. Holtz followed his landmark work on the digestive system with a detailed analysis of how zero-gravity travel affects the spleen." I said, "Although, if you and Roddy can hack the computer, there are probably other people who could have done it too, and they could have tampered with the call logs." "True," Kira admitted. "So have you come up with any leads besides Nina?"
"Plenty."
"Who?" I glanced around again. Changhai Tech and Dr. Marquez were both close enough to overhear us. Neither appeared to be eavesdropping, but they could have merely been pretending not to. "I can't go into it right now, but what I really need help with is finding Dr. Holtz's phone." Kira nodded. "Have you figured out how to get into his residence?" "No, but I'm pretty sure it isn't there anyhow." Kira's eyes suddenly lit up with excitement. "Maybe the evidence on it is the call from the bathroom the other night. Maybe he recorded it, so we know who he was talking to, because he knew someone would erase the call logs." "Maybe," I agreed. "Of course, that doesn't do us any good if we can't find the phone." I suddenly got the feeling someone was watching us and cased the room. Everyone was still doing their best to listen to Nina and stay awake. Except Roddy. Even though he was sitting in the third row, he was facing backward, staring right at us. Really, he was staring at Kira. Kira noticed him too, then quickly averted her eyes. Roddy broke into a big, wolfish smile. He slicked back his hair and, even though Nina was speaking, hopped to his feet and slipped out of his row. "Uh-oh," I said.
"What's he doing?"
Kira asked, keeping her eyes down.
"Coming our way."
"Why?"
I guess because he likes you."
At the front of the room, Nina droned on.
"Eventually, Dr. Holtz completed the first significant analysis of how spaceflight affected pregnancy and subsequent generations of many species, including rats, mice, and cockroaches."
Roddy sauntered back to where Kira and I were standing.
"Hey there,"
he whispered, in what he probably thought was a suave tone.
"What are you guys doing back here?"
"Nothing," Kira told him.
"Doesn't look like nothing to me," Roddy said. "Were you talking about me?"
"No," I said. "We were talking about Dr. Holtz."
Roddy turned to Kira, ignoring me completely.
How'd those codes I gave you work out? You find what you needed?
Yes, thanks.
Kira shrank back from Roddy, looking a bit uncomfortable.
If you ever need anything else like that, let me know.
Roddy grinned.
I know the computer's here inside and out. It's not like there's anything else to do in this crummy place.
This place isn't that crummy, Kira replied.
Give it a few weeks, Roddy told her.
We're on the moon, Kira reminded him. Have you forgotten how amazing that is? Every kid back on Earth is jealous of us. We're going to go down in history. Someday, when humans are traveling to other galaxies, they're going to look back at us and be thankful for the first steps we took for them.
Roddy laughed.
You think we're going to travel to other galaxies? Honestly?
Behind Roddy's back, I shook my head at Kira, warning her not to get Roddy started on one of his rants. I'd heard the one about space travel a dozen times already. Kira ignored me, though.
Of course, she said. Someday.
Fat chance, Roddy told her. We're not even close to interstellar travel, and we never will be. Right now, the fastest spacecraft humans have ever built travels at 160,000 miles per hour. At that rate, it'll still take a decade just to get past Pluto. The closest star to us, Proxima Centauri, is 4.25 light-years away. It would take us 17,000 years to get there. 17,000 years! That's equal to all of human civilization, from the cavemen to now, just to get to some rock that, for all we know, might be even worse than this place.
Roddy folded his arms across his chest proudly. He probably figured Kira would be impressed by his knowledge. Instead, she was annoyed at him for picking a fight with her. Now she lashed into him.
200 years ago, people thought that humans living on the moon was impossible. 100 years ago, no one had even landed on the moon, or even imagined the internet, or smartwatches, or virtual reality, or evaporators. You have no idea what humans will invent in the next century.
It won't be warp-speed travel, Roddy told her. That's a pipe dream.
Meanwhile, Nina was still slogging through Dr. Holtz's accomplishments.
As we moved further into the 21st century, she was saying, Dr. Holtz began to focus his research on the lower end of the human digestive tract.
Nearby, Chang lost the battle against sleep and toppled unconscious onto the floor. Everyone looked his way. Nina frowned but soldiered on, unfazed.
His work on the low-gravity toilet was a blessing to us all.
I noticed Zan Perfonic was standing on the far side of the room in a clump of temps. She gave me a barely perceptible nod, then returned her attention to Nina. Meanwhile, Roddy was still pressing his case against space travel.
By the way, that's 17,000 years, that's only to get to the closest possible planetary system. It'd more likely take twice that, at least, to get to anything resembling Earth. And for all we know, we'll show up on that place and find out it's covered with seas of flesh-eating acid and inhabited by brain-sucking leeches. Whoopee, that'll be fun.
I don't want to talk about this right now, Kira said.
Why?
Roddy flashed his wolfish grin again.
Because I'm destroying your argument?
No, Kira snapped. Because we're at a funeral, you Nimrod.
So let's go somewhere else.
Roddy waggled his eyebrows suggestively, completely unaware that Kira was annoyed with him.
If you want, I can help you hack the system again.
Kira wormed away from him and sidled up to me.
Not now. We can't skip out on the memorial.
Why not?
Roddy asked.
It's mandatory, Kira said. I don't want to get in trouble for blowing it off.
Who's going to notice?
Roddy waved a hand to the crowd.
Everyone's here. In fact, it's the perfect time to hack the system. No one's paying attention to security right now.
I snapped to attention. Roddy had a good point. If someone was going to get up to no good, this was the perfect time to do it. I scanned the room, taking everyone in, suddenly thinking there was something wrong I had missed before.
I don't want to miss this, Kira told Roddy. I like Dr. Holtz.
So did I, Roddy sighed, but this is lame. Nina's so boring she could lull a restless Venusian flugelworm to sleep.
Other people are going to speak soon, Kira said.
Not soon enough, Roddy muttered.
I realized what was wrong in the room. Everyone on base hadn't gathered there. One person was missing. You guys see Daphne? I asked.
Kira and Roddy quickly turned their attention back to the funeral.
She must be here, Roddy said. Daphne never misses an assembly.
Well, I don't see her, Kira said. Where do you think she is?
I don't know, I told them. But I think we'd better find out. Excerpt from the Official Residence Guide to Moonbase Alpha. Copyright 2040 by National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Vigilance.
As a Lunarnaut, you will be part of the first community of humans to ever live on a celestial body besides Earth. While this is certainly exciting, please keep in mind that as pioneers of lunar living, you may encounter the occasional problem. Therefore, we ask that every Lunarnaut, no matter what your age, be extremely alert for any sign of trouble. Keep your eyes peeled and your ears tuned. If you notice anything that seems wrong, report it to the base commander at once. Don't be shy. There's no shame in reporting something that turns out to be a false alarm. We have taken every precaution to make sure that MBA is the safest, most durable building ever constructed. But in the very unlikely chance that something does go wrong, a vigilant crew is the best defense against disaster.
Chapter 16. Skullduggery. Lunar Day 189. Afternoon. Roddy didn't bother making an excuse to leave the memorial service. He just scurried right out the door. Kira was close on his heels, excited to investigate. I held back, though. If Daphne was the killer, which was hard to believe, but still possible, then she'd be dangerous. I tried to get Zan Perfonic's attention, without being too obvious about it, waving at her. She looked my way, but so did several other people. So much for not being obvious. I pointed out the door, trying to indicate it was urgent. "Wait," Zan mouthed.
"Dash,"
Kira hissed from the hallway.
"Come on."
I reluctantly stepped out of the room, hoping Zan would follow. Kira was waiting in the hall, but Roddy was nowhere to be seen.
"Where is he?" I asked.
"He ran on ahead," Kira told me.
"Why didn't you stop him?"
"What am I supposed to do? Tell him we suspect her in Dr. Holtz's death?" Kira paused.
"Is she a suspect in Dr. Holtz's death?"
"I don't know," I admitted, "but she's definitely up to something."
"Then maybe we should find her before Roddy does and messes everything up."
I glanced back into the rec room. Zan was still watching me, but she didn't seem comfortable leaving the service yet. She hadn't taken a step toward the door.
"All right," I said. "He went this way."
Kira bounded toward the main airlock. She tried to go quickly, but she was still having trouble in low G, so she flew too high and nearly banged her head on the catwalk. I caught her leg, yanked her back down, and helped her along. We hooked right through the staging area and quickly came upon Roddy. He was flattened up against the wall of the administrative offices, doing his best to stay out of sight. Kira and I stopped in our tracks. Roddy pointed through the office window and mouthed,
"In there."
I gingerly took a few steps forward until I could see through the office window. Sure enough, Daphne was on the computer. She was typing frantically, bringing up page after page of information, pausing every few moments to touch her watch to the screen and download something. She certainly wasn't supposed to be there. She had the same look that Violet always has when she's sneaking candy without permission. I was about to step back, out of Daphne's range of sight, when Roddy sneezed. It wasn't a tiny sneeze either. It was a great big snot blaster. In the otherwise quiet hallway, Roddy might as well have clashed two symbols together. Daphne turned from the computer, saw me through the window, and shrieked. This startled Roddy, who shrieked as well. Daphne clutched her heart in shock.
"Holy cow, you guys almost scared me to death!"
Kira opened the office door and asked,
"What are you doing in here?"
Daphne looked from Roddy to me to Kira, desperation in her eyes. She quickly tried to come up with a lie, and failed.
I'm... Oh, fiddlesticks, I can't keep this up any longer. I'm a spy.
You? I couldn't contain my surprise. It was impossible to envision Daphne as a spy. A kindergarten teacher, yes, or someone who ran a bakery. But a spy?
Not like for the CIA or anything, Daphne said quickly. I'm a corporate spy.
You mean for a company? Kira asked. Daphne nodded, then flushed in embarrassment.
For maximum adventure.
The tourism company? Roddy screwed up his face in confusion. Why? They're already running the tourism here.
They want to open their own hotel on the moon, Daphne admitted. So instead of bringing up just one family of billionaires at a time, they can bring up lots of them.
How long have they been planning this? Kira asked.
Years.
Now that her secret was out, Daphne seemed very relieved, like a weight had been lifted off of her. She'd obviously been keeping everything bottled up, and now it spewed out of her.
They've suspected all along that MBA wouldn't really be the perfect vacation place. And now that the Sjobergs are so upset, they're worried all the others they have lined up to come here will start backing out. They've wanted to build a real resort here all along, with nice beds and good food and masseuses and low-gravity sports and stuff like that.
What are you doing for them? I asked.
Getting information, Daphne replied, about how certain systems work, like the evaporators and the heating and stuff like that.
You're not getting information, Roddy corrected. You're stealing it. NASA spent billions of dollars developing those systems, and now you're going to give it all away?
Daphne hung her head in shame. You're right. This is bad. Really, really bad. It's just that when Maximum Adventure approached me, they didn't make it sound bad. I mean, no one was going to get hurt. And to be honest, I really needed the money. This gig doesn't pay all that well. I could have made 10 times what I'm getting here if I'd stayed back on Earth and worked for a private robotics company.
Kira asked, Then why'd you come?
Why did any of us, Daphne replied, to go to the moon, to make history. And when Maximum Adventure offered me the money, I figured I could have it both ways, live here and cash out. But it's been terrible. Maximum Adventure has asked me to do far more than I thought they would, and I've hated living a lie, just hated it. I like everybody here so much, and I've been going behind all your backs all this time. Look at me. I love Dr. Holtz, and here I am skipping out on his memorial to do this dirty work.
To be honest, you're not missing much, I said.
Daphne heaved a huge sigh. I can't believe I'm telling you all this. I'm the worst spy in the world.
Pretty much, Roddy agreed. We're only kids and you cracked like an egg.
Daphne laughed. I know, but it just feels so good to tell someone. I've always hated lying, and now I've had to tell the biggest lie of my life for months.
She paused as something occurred to her.
Please don't tell anyone.
We can't lie for you, Kira said.
Daphne looked horrified. No, that's not what I meant. I meant that I should tell everyone what I've done, not you. I've lied long enough. It's time for me to be honest. I'll do it right after the memorial is over.
I looked to Kira and Roddy. It seemed like all of us should be really upset at Daphne, but I certainly didn't feel that way, and the others didn't seem to either. Daphne was simply too nice, and she seemed upset enough at herself for the four of us.
All right, I said. We should get back, Kira added. Nina's probably almost done with her eulogy by now.
I wouldn't bet on it, Roddy grumbled.
I started back toward the rec room. Still, I shouldn't miss my mom's eulogy. She worked really hard on it.
Kira began to follow me. However, Roddy stayed rooted to his spot, staring Daphne down.
You coming? He asked.
In a few minutes, Daphne told him. There's one more thing I need to take care of.
I stopped in my tracks. I liked Daphne, but I didn't completely trust her anymore.
What?
Daphne put her hand over her heart.
It's nothing for Maximum Adventure, I swear. I'm not even going to send them the files you caught me swiping just now. But while I was doing that, I noticed something strange in the robot log from 2 nights ago, and I want to follow up on it before I forget.
Kira and I shared a look, the same idea occurring to us at once.
You mean the night Dr. Holtz died? Kira asked.
Yes. Daphne had turned back to the computer. She wiped away several windows until she came to a log sheet filled with dates and times.
It's probably nothing important. You should get back to the memorial.
I returned to the door of the office.
What was strange?
Daphne scanned through the log.
Well, as you know, there are hundreds of robots at work here, especially at night. They run all sorts of maintenance tasks while we're asleep, calibrating the evaporators, checking the seals on the exterior of the base for oxygen leaks, cleaning the solar arrays, and so on. They work in carefully timed shifts so they're not all bumping into one another out there and screwing each other up. The computer logs all their entry and exit times, so I can tell if there's a problem with any of them. Like, if I see that a solar panel robot is taking longer than usual, I know it might be time to run some maintenance. It probably has moon dust built up in its joints or something. But instead of the usual 316 robots 2 nights ago, the log shows there were 317.
Kira and I shared another intrigued look. Roddy kept his eyes locked on Daphne, suspicious. Now that he'd busted her for spying, it was like he imagined himself to be the base police force.
Why are you only noticing this now? Aren't you supposed to check the logs every morning?
Daphne sighed. Yes, but as you might recall, there was a lot going on here yesterday.
What happened yesterday?
Roddy asked.
I smacked him on the back of the head. Dr. Holtz died, you moron.
Oh, yeah,
Roddy said.
Daphne said, with all the commotion, I forgot all about checking the robot logs. Kira asked, do you know what the extra robot was?
Not yet. Daphne kept scrolling through the log. But it shouldn't take long to find out.
Aha! Here we go.
Daphne pointed at the screen triumphantly, then looked surprised.
That's weird.
What? Kira and I asked at once.
I was expecting that one of the maintenance robots had glitched, Daphne told us, that instead of going out once, it went twice. But according to this, a drone went out. What's a drone?